Katanning to Reading, Pittsburgh to Harrisburg, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, the American Legislative Exchange Council works with lawmakers nationwide to advance pro-growth, taxpayer-friendly state policies. State Representative Eric Nelson is here to discuss. The city of Pittsburgh is facing a significant budget deficit as the mayor and council grapple with finances. Eric Montardi and Alex Sedini have details on this week's Allegheny Institute report. And as usual, Governor Josh Shapiro and lawmakers are in last-minute negotiations over the state budget. Emily Bry from Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania, talks about a better way on this week's Lincoln Radio Journal Commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to State Representative Eric Nelson in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Pennsylvania state budget deadline, now just a couple of weeks away, and little progress appears to have been made toward crafting a new spending plan. Governor Josh Shapiro has proposed, and the Democrat-controlled state house has passed, a budget that spends over $5 billion more than projected revenue. They want to drain the state's rainy day emergency fund to cover the deficit. But Republicans control the state Senate, and Majority Leader Joe Pittman has termed the Democrats' plan a, quote, performative budget, and says he would prefer to come to a collective agreement on a new plan. The state budget has not been passed on time any year during Shapiro's tenure as governor. It appears the streak is poised to continue. This could get interesting. Progressive Philadelphia District Attorney Larry Krasner has launched a high-profile televised fight with Mayor Sherelle Parker and City Council. He's demanding $5.6 million more for his office budget. That has sparked rumors he is setting the stage to challenge Parker when she stands for re-election next year. Krasner is also being mentioned as a potential progressive challenger to U.S. Senator John Fetterman, who has broken with his party on several key issues and who is up for re-election in 2028. And some good news, the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette reports that U.S. Steel now estimates it will spend between $2 billion and $2.5 billion to build a new hot strip mill at the Edgar Thomson Works in Braddock. The original estimate for the mill was about $1 billion. Investment in the new plant was part of a deal that saw Japan's Nippon Steel acquire U.S. Steel last year. The deal kept U.S. Steel's headquarters in Pittsburgh and included construction of the new plant. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. The American Legislative Exchange Council, or ALEC, works with legislators in each of the 50 states to share ideas and craft legislation designed to empower taxpayers and enact a pro-growth economic agenda. State Representative Eric Nelson of Westmoreland County co-chairs the ALEC Caucus in Pennsylvania's House of Representatives. He joins us now to discuss the work of the organization. Eric, welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. Eric, when we talk about the American Legislative Exchange Council, members of our audience may not really know what ALEC is or maybe never have even heard about it. So give us a little background about the organization itself.
Oh, it's great to be here, Loman. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about ALEC, which is America's largest voluntary membership organization of state legislators and public. So we have public and private entities that participate, and it's a sharing of best practices, concepts. They'll have hearings and educational sessions, and it's really about promoting what I refer to as ALEC's top three principles, which are limited government, free markets, and federalism.
You've been a member of ALEC for a number of years. You've been in the legislature for several sessions now. So, Eric, how have you personally benefited from being part of ALEC? Has it helped you in crafting legislation, crafting amendments, and all the minutiae that goes into drafting a bill and getting it enacted into law?
Absolutely. And I've really benefited from my membership in ALEC. I'm now one of the state chairs for Pennsylvania, and so I'm a strong advocate for ALEC. So I would say there's a little bit of bias coming from me, but when we talk about Stephen Covey and the principles of effectiveness, and as a small business owner, sharpening the saw is improvement and seeking information to be able to help best educate a legislator that has to make decisions on so many different areas. And one of the great things about ALEC, which took us a number of years, whether it was tax reform in Pennsylvania for small business, the Section 179 deduction tax, and how Pennsylvania's small businesses were not being treated the same as their large corporations. It took us 5 years to make that change, and those principles of equal treatment and the depth needed to help convince other legislators, key component. Another great piece of legislation that I credit ALEC for being an enormous part of was our Zuckerbucks legislation that, if you remember back in the very contentious 2020 election, there was millions and millions of dollars throughout the United States. And in Pennsylvania, specific monies were sent from Zuckerberg, which we refer to as Zuckerbucks, to given counties. And those counties then were able to hyper-extract votes from the areas. And we shut that practice down in Pennsylvania and did it in a bipartisan manner. And ALEC was a core component of that. I serve on a number of, they call them task forces. So there's energy and agriculture. There's an elections task force. There's a civil justice. We, in Pennsylvania, we have a bill that's about to pass out of the Senate, ALEC model policy that is related to sex trafficking, and developed in concert with the Pennsylvania and National Restaurant and Lodging Association to instill uniform best practices to help confront just a really dark and growing entity. So whether it's from tax policy to sex trafficking, ALEC is really helping to craft national policy and Pennsylvania policy. And I personally have worked with them to get these things across the finish line.
We are talking with State Representative Eric Nelson, who represents the 57th State Legislative District, that really right in the middle of Westmoreland County. And he is state co-chairman of the American Legislative Exchange Council here in Pennsylvania. And Eric, as we look to the fact that we are now very deep in the state budget-making process, theoretically to be passed by the end of June, we'll see about that. In terms of ALEC, what sort of policies and best practices does ALEC promote when it comes to responsible state government budgeting?
I find ALEC is a very useful tool on principles, big picture principles of freedom, lower taxes, limited regulations, and of course they get involved in individual state rights, but those lowering taxes and limiting regulations, those are core components to Pennsylvania's budget. A number of years ago, when the Republicans were in the majority and we passed a multi-year step down of our corporate net income taxes, because time and time again, it's been proven in the real world that lower taxes mean higher prosperity. And Pennsylvania has been growing, not as fast as we'd like, but the regulation and regulation reforms that we were able to achieve, much from the hard work and hard-nosed approach that the Senate took last year to eliminate the regional greenhouse gas initiative. Pennsylvania had not built a new power plant since Governor Wolf signed that executive order for Reggie, so that was back in 2019, and we were able to get that repealed. And we saw what happened to energy prices, not because of data centers, but because our baseload power plants closed at a faster rate than they were being replaced, and less power means higher prices for everyone. So the components of ALEC, of lowering taxes, limiting regulation, really weave themselves, or as there is an opportunity to weave them, both in the budget and in the codes. And that includes even education policy.
Energy costs, of course, are something that have been rising dramatically. It's putting a pinch on consumers, Eric. And you hit on a really good point there, that we have seen more power plants close than open. As you look forward, and I understand Republicans are in a, well, one-seat minority in the state House, but were Republicans to get back in charge, looking ahead at energy, are there ways that we can reduce regulations and otherwise encourage the development of more power plants just so that we can continue to keep pace with economic growth? And, oh, also, by the way, a lot of vehicles are being switched from fossil fuels to electricity, so there's a growing demand there as well.
There's such opportunity. If we were in the majority able to drive policy, some of the things I think that get lost in the argument, because politically there is an effort to keep people polarized and against the wall. But in a bipartisan way, with Republican-driven policy, responsible economic development is achievable, just even eliminating the lawfare that is happening. And I think Pennsylvanians don't realize that these C4 corporations that are oftentimes funded not just by out-of-state money, but by out-of-the-country money, those lawsuits delay investment. So the tolling of an air permit, let's say, would, if we implemented policy that said, should, let's say, a power plant enter into a lawsuit from an environmental group that is funded by a C4 organization. These are very organized, very wealthy, and very sophisticated efforts to delay the implementation of more power plants, because other countries benefit from that. And if a air permit did not expire during the course of a lawsuit, the company would still need to win the lawsuit. The permits would still all need to be approved, but it would prevent them from going back to step one and having to start all over again. And that's really the goal of lawfare, to delay the project to the point that that company wanting to invest billions in Pennsylvania and bring millions of man hours of work, they leave the state and go somewhere else. You know, and we've seen that from compressed natural gas that was wanting to go into Marcus Hook over in Philadelphia and allow Pennsylvania's natural gas to change the global dynamics in Europe. That plant was blocked. The Invenergy plant, and actually 8 major multi-billion-dollar investments since Governor Wolf signed Reggie, were canceled in Pennsylvania. Whether it's a brand new steel mill, the largest, cleanest rolling mill that U.S. Steel wanted to put in, Pennsylvania's and Pittsburgh's Allegheny County Department of Health for 2 years would not approve the permit. And so U.S. Steel had no choice. The equipment, Lohman, was sitting on the banks of the river in Pittsburgh, and they floated it down and built a plant in West Virginia and Alabama. And those plants are thriving, and those states are getting the jobs and the revenue, and Pennsylvania will not. And those types of policies, limited government, limited regulation, that's not anti-environment. Higher standards and higher principles we can achieve together.
Well, Pennsylvania, you know, even though we benefit, as you well know, Eric, from great abundance of natural resources, transportation, and a wonderful workforce, we still shoot ourselves in the foot with policy and regulations. But it is great that organizations like the American Legislative Exchange Council and the lawmakers who are part of it, including its state co-chairman Eric Nelson, are working to try and improve the Commonwealth. Please give us a website where folks can go if they want to learn more about these issues that you and Alec are working on.
They could go to my website, which is www.repnelson.com, and they could also go to the Alec website, which is alec.org, it would pop up. There's really some great information.
State Representative Eric Nelson of Westmoreland County. Eric, thank you for being with us. Appreciate it.
Absolutely, Lohman. I really appreciate the time.
Despite last year's large property tax increase, the city of Pittsburgh is once again facing a significant budget deficit. We get details now from Eric Montardi and Alec Sodini on this Allegheny Institute report.
Hello and welcome to the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal. I'm Alex Sodini, and today I am joined by Research Director at the Allegheny Institute, Eric Montardi. Eric, how are you today?
I'm great, Alex. I hope you are as well.
I am. Thank you very much for asking. The city of Pittsburgh recently released its annual comprehensive financial report, and this essentially gives an insight as to how the city performed financially last year. We've also seen the mayor ask city council to reopen the budget to account for a number of increased expenditures, and this has sort of put the city's financial situation back into mainstream thought. Can you give our listeners a general overview on how the city did financially last year?
I'd be happy to. Overall, the city ended the year with a deficit, which is never a good result. So if you look at how much money was collected in revenue, that was $658 million. How much was spent, that was $708 million. That resulted in a $50 million deficit. Now, of course, with accounting and actual numbers and looking at everything that happened in the year, there's money that gets transferred and then where the city ends the year with its fund balance. But looking at the actual performance of 2025 with how much money was brought in and how much was spent, the city ran a $50 million deficit.
Most of the city's revenue comes from various forms of taxes. How did the city's tax collections fare last year?
Compared to what the city budgeted for the year, the actual revenues came in about $10 million less. The biggest source of tax revenue is property taxes on all the taxable real estate in the city of Pittsburgh. That has undergone a lot of issues in the last few years, most of it due to a lawsuit over how the county was submitting data to the state that calculates the factor that is used in property tax appeals. And that factor has gone down, and there have been a lot of appeals that have been won by commercial property owners, specifically the skyscrapers that are in downtown Pittsburgh. In 2025, surprisingly, the actual collections outperformed the budget, and the controller attributed this to there was just a slowdown in the appeal activities, and the Department of Finance just improved on its collection strategies, but still said, in the controller's opinion, that there needs to be a countywide reassessment. The second largest source of revenue is the wage tax, or the earned income tax, which is on the earnings of City of Pittsburgh residents who work in the city. That tax actually came in below budget. We had this situation in 2024, where property taxes were down compared to budget and wage tax was higher than budget. That was a reversal in 2025. There's other large taxes that the city collects: payroll preparation, which is on businesses, parking, when people park a car and they pay for that transaction. One other interesting tax source that we have talked about for and had an impact in 2025, simply because it is no longer being collected, is the facilities usage fee. And that was a fee slash tax determined by the courts that was paid by non-resident athletes and performers when they utilized the stadiums or one of the other publicly funded venues in the city of Pittsburgh. That went through a few years of litigation, and in September of 2025, the Supreme Court invalidated the tax. The city had budgeted about $6 million and brought in $3 million. That tax is now gone, and the non-resident athletes and performers are going to have to pay the 1% earned income tax that would fall on non-residents. Besides the taxes it levies, the city also levies fees, licenses, permits. The state provides pension aid. That's a rather large revenue. And then, of course, there's the American Rescue Plan money that came from the federal government as a result of COVID. 2025 was the first year in the last five where there was not a transfer from the American Rescue Plan trust fund to the general fund, as that money is essentially expended.
While the city has collected a lot of money, it's also spent a lot of money, as we have chronicled over the years. What did last year's expenditures look like?
Of that $708 million, about 60% of it goes to three functions. There's the Department of Finance, the Bureau of Police, and the Bureau of Fire. And the Department of Finance is a large expenditure because that is where the city accounts for its debt and pension expenditures. So it's not that the department is very large. It's just there are those two expenses that are very large under the department's heading. Those three departments each spent over $100 million in 2025, and with various results, either above or below what was budgeted. There's another six functions that spent about $20 million or more, and those are in public works and also in public safety.
The city controller has sounded the alarm on the city's financial situation for a few years now. What has she recommended, and what has the Allegheny Institute recommended in the past to help improve the city's financial situation?
The controller's recommendation is to focus on growth and to focus on core services. And I think for the city government and for our recommendations over the years, whether they be the benchmark city reports, looking at budgets, looking at audits, it's if the city can focus on core functions and core services, then the growth is going to follow, right? I mean, the city has tried for a long time to grow its way out of its problems by using tax incentives and subsidies for developers. The results have proven that that really does not work when you're not addressing the underlying issues. If we look first at what we've done with the benchmark city report, it's trying to compare on a per capita basis what the city spends in a given year versus what the benchmark city has spending in that same year. And if we look at 2025, all the governmental funds, so general fund, the capital spending, community development spending, the American Rescue Plan, and all the other funds that the city government operates, that came out to around $950 million with the census population estimate of 307,000. That equates to spending of around $3,096. If the controller is saying you need to focus on core services, which most municipalities begin with public safety, public works, then it's looking at what non-core services could be privatized, outsourced, consolidated. Where do you achieve the savings in order to then bring that per capita spending down? In the brief, we referenced the Competitive Pittsburgh Task Force, which wrote a report in 1996, and they said the same thing, that the city needs to focus on core services and can't waste resources on things that are done better by others. The question is how serious city policymakers are on achieving those savings. You alluded earlier to the 2026 budget. That budget was passed in December of 2025 with a property tax increase. There was a lot of debate over what are the city's core services? What are its functions? Can the city afford to transfer money to functions that maybe are better performed by foundations or nonprofits? But the decision that they came with was, after proposing a 30% property tax increase, was to settle on a 20% property tax increase. The controller last year had said 2025 through 2029 were going to be very lean years. We've seen 1 year get audited. 2025, that was a deficit. Now we know that 2026, there's a tax increase. And when you look through the five-year forecast of the budget that was adopted and then it was reopened and amended in April of this year, where the city expects to end in 2030 is 10% of its ending fund balance as a percentage of its expenditures. That is the minimum threshold that the city sets for itself.
Very informative as always, Eric, and I thank you very much for joining me today. As always, we invite our listeners to visit our website, www.alleghenyinstitute.org, for more on this topic and others. For Eric Montardi, this is Alex Sodini, and this has been the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal.
Pennsylvania's state budget process is broken and needs reform. So says Emily Bry from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
Harrisburg is once again racing towards the June 30th budget deadline, and the question before lawmakers is bigger than whether they can get a deal done on time. After last year's 135-day budget impasse, Pennsylvanians deserve more than another last-minute agreement held together by gimmicks and wishful thinking. Our taxpayers deserve a budget that can survive the next downturn and stop pretending state government can spend faster than taxpayers can even earn. Governor Josh Shapiro's proposed budget is being sold as an investment agenda. That is language Harrisburg always uses when it wants to spend more. Beneath the branding is a basic math problem. The governor's $53.26 billion proposal would increase spending by $2.72 billion, or 5.4%, while revenues under the current tax structure are projected to grow by only $919 million, or 1.9%. To make the numbers work, the plan would require $6.5 billion in new revenue. Pennsylvania's rainy day fund exists for emergencies and economic downturns, not to reinforce a recurring spending problem. Using reserves to balance a budget may make the spreadsheet work for 1 year, but it does not solve the structural deficit. This tactic simply moves the bill to next year, when taxpayers will be asked again to pay. The Independent Fiscal Office has already made the danger clear. Pennsylvania faces a structural deficit that could grow substantially in the years ahead, and the state's financial reserves could be exhausted as soon as the 2027-2028 fiscal year if lawmakers keep using them to support spending levels the economy cannot sustain. This is the real debate in the June budget negotiations. Not whether education matters. Of course it does. Not whether public safety matters. It absolutely does. Not whether infrastructure, healthcare, and economic opportunities matter. They absolutely do. The question is whether Harrisburg can fund core priorities without building a budget that depends on one-time money, speculative revenues, and future tax hikes. Right now, Senate Republican leaders are raising exactly the concerns taxpayers should want raised. The House has advanced the governor's budget framework, but the Senate has warned that the spending level is too high and that any final deal must better respect taxpayers now and in the future. Families across Pennsylvania make hard choices every single day. They delay purchases, they cut expenses, they compare prices, and they save for emergencies. Small businesses are forced to do the same. They cannot declare every want a necessity. They cannot use a savings account as a permanent income. They cannot count on a future tax scheme to cover today's payroll. Harrisburg should not get a pass from the rules everyone else lives by. The right answer is not another temporary patch. The right answer is rules-based budgeting. That is why the Responsible Budgeting Act, introduced as House Bill 1947 by Representative Tom Jones, deserves serious attention this legislative session. The bill would put long overdue guardrails around state spending by establishing a limit on fiscal year spending, addressing emergency spending, creating requirements around raising revenue, and establishing a Commonwealth Reserve Fund. This concept is simple. State government should not grow faster than the economy that supports it. The legislation's co-sponsorship memo describes a spending limit tied to trend economic growth, a deficit break, limits on raising revenue, a reserve fund, and rules for emergency spending and surplus revenues, including tax rebates and debt reduction. In plain English, that means lawmakers would have to prioritize. They would have to make trade-offs. They would have to defend new spending instead of assuming taxpayers will just absorb it. Critics of the spending limits often argue that rules tie lawmakers' hands, but that's the point. Good rules tie the hands of politicians before politicians tie the hands of taxpayers. The lesson for Harrisburg here is clear. When government avoids hard budget choices, taxpayers eventually pay for the delay. Pennsylvania cannot tax, spend, and reserve drain its way into prosperity. A competitive Commonwealth needs lower costs, predictable policy, responsible reserves, and a government that understands every dollar it spends first had to be earned by someone else. The June budget negotiations are a test. Lawmakers can pass another budget that looks balanced on paper while deepening the structural deficit underneath, or they can choose a better path. Discipline over denial, taxpayers over special interests, and long-term stability over short-term applause. Pennsylvanians are not asking Harrisburg to do the impossible. They're asking Harrisburg to do what they do every day, live within its means. This is Emily Bry, State Director with Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 31 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WKVE-FM in Mount Pleasant, WJSA-FM in Jersey Shore, along with WHSK-FM in Bloomsburg, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, all of whom have helped to underwrite the cost of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Frederick W. Anton III Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.